Already. I got that. This here. All right, we'll kind of straddle, I guess. To get nice and cozy in here.
One of these days, we'll have to invest in a good set of chairs here.
Just need a wealthy investor to toss us. please send us some.
A wealthy
please send
investor
your donations.
To send us $200 worth of chairs.
Exactly. We can head down to the local Value Village and see what we can do to improve this.
Have you heard of that high-end store, Value Village?
Yeah, exactly, right? Regina's finest in used furniture. Truth.
Where would you like your stain, sir?
Truth.
Yeah.
Christ.
Isn't it hard to just start from nothing?
You just gotta, it is. Yeah, it's literally just like, all right, look alive, folks.
Look alive, yeah.
Yeah, seriously, though, it feels like you're doing a live performance here. It's just,
It is.
All right, impress.
Yeah, go.
Exactly, though.
I don't have a script.
Pretty much. Pretty much. Welcome in, everyone. Greg's Weekend Rental Podcast, episode 16. I, of course, am Greg here, joined by Jeremy, as always.
Hello.
Jeremy.
Yes.
It finally happened. We have a brand new record for comic book sale. We talked about this earlier on one of our episodes here. Going up for auction was the Action Comics number 1, 8.5, highest graded copy to ever hit market, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And pedigree copy.
Yeah.
Sold for a record-breaking $6 million. Great sale, good sale, brand new record sale. It's interesting because a couple of people that I actually talked to who are deeper in the comic book world, because, I mean, let's face it, I am more of an observer. I can't really speak to the deeper nuances of what happens in the comic book world and the actual inside the mind of the other comic collectors, right? In video games, we can kind of have a gauge of who thinks what should sell for what and where things should go, even if it doesn't necessarily get there. So with the comic book, I looked at it and I was like, $6 million, that's crazy. Brand new record, this is huge. Other people I talked to were saying that it should have, whatever word you want to say, should have crossed over 7 million. Some people were even estimating 8. And it's really hard to know if that's just copium from the side of, you know what I mean?
Right.
People who are heavily invested always want to see these items sell for the absolute most they could. But interesting to hear. And even on a world record sale, there might be a little bit of disappointment from some comic collectors.
Yeah, I guess I could feel that. And what was your guess, by the way? I forget.
I was in the sevens, I believe.
Okay.
Because I did think, the old record was, 5 million something?
Yeah, something like that.
So I thought this was going to push. I thought we were going to see a bidding war. 2024's environment right now. Bitcoin, I believe, is at $70,000 again right now.
Mm-hmm.
We are in not a healthy market. But we're in a very lucrative investment type of market right now, where there's money flowing around in a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, maybe it wouldn't have got 6 million, but.
Yeah, true. I mean, I think given the relative ease of, say, interest rates, how they are right now, I feel like the 6 million is pretty decent, just given how easy it is to kind of stick your money somewhere and forget it, you know?
Right. Because right now you can almost get 4 or 5% with very little risk at all.
No risk.
No risk.
Yeah. I mean, unless a bank goes under or something, but.
Oh, they don't do that. You know? I've never heard of
those are
too
getting,
big to fail. Isn't that the.
They're getting bailed out.
Yeah.
Unless you're the Lehman Brothers, but whatever.
Yeah, one. They had to be one fall guy.
Yeah. That's right. The token fall guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think you're right, though, is just given that interest rates aren't super low to actually borrow money, utilize money. 6 million in this climate probably is good.
Yeah, which means probably, people are using their cash, not someone else's cash.
Maybe not super leveraged.
Yeah.
Like we were seeing in 2021, where literally everyone was leveraged to the nines.
Yeah.
No one was using real money.
Yeah.
This was credit on 0% for 24 months.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is, I think, given that circumstance, I think it's, I think 6 million is pretty healthy. I mean, I think I guess 6.5.
Yeah, you were right in there.
Yeah,
barely,
something like that.
Kind of barely beating the record, but still being a new record price.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it for sure it's a special copy. So, I mean, I was pretty sure it would break a record, but I didn't think. I guess I just didn't have the feeling that it would go crazy like people thought it would.
I think the biggest thing, and I know that these copies may never even hit the open market, but the other two copies do exist. There are two 9.0s out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but feel in the minds of the bidders here who are going up for $6 million or whatever it's going to end at, in the back of their head, it's always, okay, if I spend too much or if this pushes too hard, what if one of those other 9.0s does hit the market?
Right.
What if one of those do come out?
Right. And what would it go for? Like, you know, what's the speculative value on that kind of thing too?
Well, exactly. If you're
given that there's two of them.
Yes, exactly. So even if one of these 9.0s hits, I think there's like an artificial ceiling created when you have these items that do exist, even though they aren't hitting the open market. It's in the back of everyone's head who's going to spend this much money that like, hey, I can't because there's better copies. There's two better copies that exist.
Yeah.
You're not even fighting for the top pop right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, most collectors, I think, realize that those two copies are gone for a generation. I don't think they're ever going to come back. So
that you have to hope.
Yeah.
Like that's the thing, right? You can say that.
Yeah.
But are you going to trust that opinion to the tune of $6 million?
Yeah.
Because that's what it comes down to. You can say these aren't going to hit the market. They're in the unobtainable collection. What if they do?
Yeah.
It's I think Mickey Mantle follows the same thing where barely any of the cards ever actually hit the market. I don't think the quote unquote nicest copy has ever hit the market on Mickey Mantle.
Yeah.
It's speculated what it would sell for. So anytime the other copies hit, they usually sell for a brand new record, the nicest copy. But you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It feels like there is that artificial ceiling until we actually see the nicest copy that exists hit the market, sell for some stupid amount. Because I assume the 9.0, I wouldn't be surprised if it literally doubled.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you could be right on that.
12 million over 10 wouldn't shock me.
Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, like the real cream of the crop items, they rarely come on public market because everyone wants to kind of protect the mystique a little bit. They want to protect the price. A lot of people who buy these things don't want to have that price in public memory as well. Like I find this very similar to an antique market, like fine instruments. The real special stuff, the stuff that like you rarely see, is usually in private hands and never comes to public auction.
But what about the price manipulation, the pumping? What value is there in keeping all of this private?
Well, because at that point it's not about money. It's you know, it's kind of about just holding really great assets and protecting that perceived value over time, I think.
Even with, like, because the comic guy would have a lot of incentive to pump. Like, he has two.
Right.
Put one to open auction, you set the highest price ever, it sets it, and it's like, you know what I mean? Record-breaking book. Books are now $10 million. I think that's the next benchmark. $10 million comics is the next benchmark to break.
But when you don't need money.
Yeah.
What's the point?
I guess. Yeah. I'm thinking like a poor person over here.
Yeah.
Jeremy, we could get $10 million.
You know, it's funny. It's like the people who have access to that kind of wealth, it's really, it's a resource, right? So it's like the meaning is kind of lost once you eclipse that, you know, that point of funding your lifestyle. And it's like, what's the point of having more?
When it's truly not a necessity in any way.
It's not. Yeah, it's totally not a necessity at that point. And it's like, well, what is actually more fulfilling to own? Something that's really special or a boatload of money you have no use for? So I think the tangible assets, I think, get that special factor to them at that point.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy, I guess.
I
understand it. I do understand it because even with myself, right, there's like at my own financial level, I own things where it's like, oh man, that's not really like I could use the money.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. The money would help. Mm-hmm. Is, I guess, the best way to put it.
Yeah, you actually have a use for it.
Yeah, like,
you
could do something absolutely, with it. Like, you know.
You could put it towards, like, a house down payment.
We're sitting in a freaking rental here in a one-bedroom, like, you know, talking about million-dollar comic books from my, like, $1,000 a month rental. Like, I could use the money.
Yeah.
I understand that fully.
Yeah, so it's like it's a totally...
But at the same time, I hold these items.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a totally different mindset when the value of money is completely lost because you have no need for it. And you likely will never have need for it because you can't spend like $1 billion. Like what are you going to buy? A country? You know, it's like when your wealth like exceeds the GDP of certain countries, it's like, well, you know, what's actually cool? Historical artifacts, really great, like amazing collectibles for Superman. That kind of stuff is cool. And it's like money is not cool at that point.
That's I mean, kind of all it comes down to. Yeah. You either buy your expensive supercars, your expensive watches, pop culture relics, actual relics.
Yeah.
I mean, right? You go all the way to ancient coins, ancient history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what a lot of these people collect, because truly you go into the world of a one of one.
Yeah.
The exclusivity.
Yeah.
More than pop culture could ever allot you. Like, yeah. You know, you're buying the highest graded copy of something that exists. Do you know how many Action Comics ones there are? Just total?
I believe there's, is there 80 something? I think there's 80.
Oh man, it's actually quite low.
Yeah,
it's pretty low. That's actually really low.
It's pretty low.
Jesus.
Yeah, a lot of these Golden Age comics, there's very few copies.
All right, wow. Yeah. I mean, that's like NWC level right there, actually.
Yeah.
Like right on the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I think CGC has 80 something graded copies. Well, maybe we'll check on that and amend it if we need to.
Run that. Run the numbers. Yeah.
That's, you know, that's what I thought I remembered seeing when I before our last episode when we talked.
Yeah,
about
I know.
This.
I looked at it too, and now I can't remember the actual number. Yeah, I saw.
I think it was like 83 or something like that.
Yeah, fair enough. No, I was gonna say there were hundreds, like not 700, but yeah. You know what I mean. 222 copies is where it was in my head. But
yeah,
in saying that, I mean, yeah, I guess going after Action Comics 1, so long as it still holds that status. Mm-hmm. In modern collecting here, because I who knows what it'll look like another 50 years, but as it stands, yeah, I mean, 80 of them exist. You own nicest copies, second nicest copy, nicest pedigree copy.
Yeah, and something that is approaching 100 years old, you know. That's something that was just a toss away item back then for so many kids, you know. That's why there's no copies around, is because this is like way before anyone thought to preserve these kinds of things.
I forget that it's almost 100 years. Like, yeah. What is it, 85 this year? 85 years, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
Like, that's insane.
It's 1937, did it come out? 37?
I was going to say 38.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's one of those.
I'll amend that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost 100 years though.
Yeah.
And I think it's the, that almost gets lost on people when they're comparing it to stuff like even Pokemon cards to video games, of course. That's probably the number one parallel people make now, comics and video games.
Yeah.
When we talk about a lot of this, even the 60s comics from the 60s,
mm-hmm.
that have 20, 25, almost 30 years on our oldest, most collectible video games. Like, I know NES Atari, stuff, yeah. Magnavox exists, but, you know, anything pre-Nintendo really hasn't captured the same collector interest, the same aura in the sphere of collecting.
It's just not relevant anymore, and it didn't create the same kind of cultural stir that Nintendo did, so...
Yeah, it just, that's what I mean. It just didn't, it hasn't. I genuinely do think Atari still could. Like, I get it. I get why Atari would be super expensive.
Yeah.
I don't know if the actual, supply, demand, all that stuff, there's a lot of unsold stuff. But we do still see rare Atari games sell for thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that still exists, like
the Air Raid or whatever?
Well, yeah, we have Air Raid, Red Sea Crossing. Like, yeah. There's that super rare side. Even in the factory sealed on open side, are you familiar with Adventure on Atari?
Vaguely, yeah.
So one of the first, I think like an RPG style game. I think it's an RPG. God, I hope so. We'll amend that too. But,
whatever it is.
But the one of the first of that kind to be on a home console, unopened copies still sell for over $1,000 every single time it comes up. That game is sold for like $5,000, $6,000 recently.
Yeah.
Like not just in the 2021 boom. So... If the proper pump comes along, but that's the most simple way to put it. If the proper influencers enter, if the proper information starts getting spread, if a YouTuber comes along and starts really talking about Atari, hey, this is why it's cool, this is what's interesting, this is why Atari is relevant in our culture, why you should care more about Pac-Man, why you should care more about these early Activision titles. I don't know if I'll ever do it, but I wouldn't sit there being like, Atari shouldn't be expensive. This is so, like, it's Atari. It's...
Yeah. In reality, there could be a catalyst for anything. And just because it's older doesn't mean it's more valuable. You know, like, there are plenty of, I think, Golden Age comics that are worthless.
Yeah. I think that's a lot of things people don't get to.
Yeah.
Is when they compare these.
Yeah. Age does not equate to value. So,
and even talking about comic collecting, a lot of them are worthless.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to touch on that. Yeah, the majority, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's so hyper-focused in on, like, these Golden Age keys.
Yeah.
And you think that encompasses all of comic collecting. And it's like, oh, man, there's thousands of comics that are generally worthless.
Yeah.
And in the same vein, video game collecting is going to follow that as well.
Yeah.
And I don't think people attribute that properly.
Yeah. Although, you know, part of me thinks that maybe sealed games are more akin to like key issues, just because they're much rarer and are kind of the purest version of video games.
So sealed in general, or
sealed in general, sealed, like for NES, especially anything Nintendo. Like, I think sealed games will have value regardless, just because they're the purest version of that.
Yeah, but like, even on Nintendo, right, we have 700 games.
Yeah,
like, a lot of those, even factory sealed, are going to hover $50 to $100. I think.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, like, what, Impossible Mission 2 or something? Like,
well, Anticipation, Othello, like, we can, there's, you could probably name off 100 games just that are worthless.
Yeah.
Quote, unquote.
Quote, unquote.
Quote, unquote.
Until you get, like, you know, a 9.8 A++ or something, and then it's like, well, maybe it's a few $100.
So if you have the most pristine copy of some of these, you might be able to turn $200-$300.
Because it is very feasible to collect a set of something. So, you know, I think, like, people who are after that kind of stuff might be propping up the value at some point. But
like mini sets, do you mean?
Some like sets? Yeah, mini sets, like, you know, board game set or something. Or
not, if only I could find, like, a copy of Anticipation. Like, where are they?
Where are they? I really need this for my collection. Where's that one of 10?
Yeah, exactly. That's the future of NES collecting there, I guess.
But I'm saying, like, you know, there's still a lot of room to grow, you know, like, I don't think it's fully exploited yet. So
exploited.
Whatever.
Is that when I go, is that when I talk about the pump as well? Like,
not even pump, just like, you know, someone wanting to put together a really quirky set of something.
Yeah.
You know, say I want to put together like a SNES, you know, first person shooter set. So they'll go for like Doom and Jurassic Park and,
you Jurassic know. Park was a first person shooter?
Well, part of it was.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Ugh. The ocean game, the interiors of buildings were like FPS style.
Interesting.
Yeah, you never played it?
I think I did, but we were garbage at it.
Okay.
We either rented it or someone owned it.
And you couldn't
it,
save,
like,
so.
Yeah, it was like, oh my God, this game's impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I did play it, but much like Lion King, much like Mickey on Super Nintendo, like, these games were impossible, man.
Yeah.
Like, we had Star Wars,
you know,
as
what?
Well. Like,
thinking back to it, I did beat Lion King when I was a kid.
How?
I couldn't beat Maximum Carnage. I could beat Lion King, though. I got past that ridiculous level.
Which one? They're all
so
they're
many.
No, there's the giraffes,
the swinging,
and stuff.
The swinging level.
Yeah, but that's like level 2.
I forget
like
which one it was.
So but early, the giraffes, when you swing on their tails and stuff.
Not even that one. It's
there's another
there's
one.
There's another one.
I didn't see that one.
There's a later one.
I bowed out there. If we got past the giraffe level, man, it was like you're at no continues final lives. You know, there's no such thing as a good run through.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird.
It's awful.
Yeah.
But with your point to the subsets and going after FPS stuff, when I was talking about Atari with the proper information or the proper, like, people don't need to be told to what to collect. People, you know what I mean? They understand. Like, people can gravitate towards their own stuff. But without information or rationale or information, twice. You really need that information.
It's really important.
Yeah, you really need that part. But if you don't have the actual guidance or reason to go after this stuff, you just never will.
Yeah,
like, I didn't know Jurassic Park's first person shooter. If you want to put together a list of, hey, these are the most influential first person shooters on Super Nintendo, these are super important games, these are interesting, this is why they are interesting, these are what they influenced, it's like, oh my God, that's neat.
Yeah.
You can connect with it.
Yeah,
you can actually do that. But for some random person to enter into, like, say someone born in the year 2005, I'm gonna start collecting Super Nintendo games, where are you starting? What are you going after? What are the... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe they're going after, like, the original versions of the games they played on, you know, virtual console, like Switch.
It could be that as well.
Yeah.
It just, if you want to go after... I think we'll get there. I think with grading companies existing, it probably will come from them.
Yeah.
CGC has already published some resources talking about, like, oh, here's some rare Xbox games, here's some of the... You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it's really... Yeah, it really is just a barrier of information. I think when that proliferates more, when people understand more about, you know, what's interesting, what's kind of innovative, what's important on the system, I think we'll probably see more outreach into maybe like non-standard titles as well.
100%.
Like, kind of like almost how it used to be, but in a very smaller version, you know, with Nintendo Age collectors.
Yeah,
there's like really much fewer people that knew these things.
Yeah, but well, that's what I mean. There's like 50 of us who, like, you know, really, really know NES, and like, they'll tell you everything about every game, production runs, print variants and stuff. But like, then it ends. No one knows.
That's right.
Anytime I go to a Reddit thread, it's like, what? Who cares about first production? What does first production mean? Like, what are we... This is, you know, talking about the Castlevania hang tab, people act like it's fake news.
Right.
When you're like, that's a hang tab, that's first production, early production, first run of Castlevania, then it changed. Oh, that's a circle seal of quality, that's an oval. Like, that also matters, you know, because people act like it's fake.
Right.
Who cares about this? This is fake value. Well, because
it's like, it's completely beyond their ability to get something like that. And, you know, it's easier to hit on it than to actually know anything.
I don't know what the mental barrier is to people even wanting to disseminate the information.
Yeah.
Because with comics, you know, you talk about how much information exists. If I want to go into the comic book world, it's all laid out for me. The key issues, what I need to care about, who I should go after. Well,
because we have this, like, history of 60 years of collecting or more.
Yeah, it's freaking great.
Yeah.
It's easy, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah.
Me not knowing anything, I could kind of enter into comics and have some interest about where I want to go.
Yeah, and with comic grading, it's just an inherently easier field to collect in, I think. Video games are just really just held back by information and the complexities of all these different kinds of console games. It's a tough thing for new entries, I think.
And then getting over the hurdle of factory sealed is super important.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's one of those things.
It's going to be a hurdle in itself.
I think toy collectors probably struggle with the same thing.
They have to.
Yeah.
Have to. How do you know it's not just re-glued? How didn't they just fake the cardboard in the thing?
Like, yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, again, talking about Castlevania there for $90,000 it sold for, a lot of the comments are, okay, so it sold for $90,000. How, like, people are going to fake it. It's not worth $90,000. Surely you can just fake it. You can fake the whole box. You can fake the whole factory sealed. Like, you know, the money incentive is too high. So how can you ever know you're truly getting something authentic? And again, I think it's just like this complete disconnect from the actual information or knowledge you need to even start commenting on this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's like the most layman Norman type of, oh, well, it could be fake. You know, like, oh, yeah. Great input.
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. Could be. Yeah. Like, I'm glad no other market exists where things have $100,000. Everyone just fakes everything. That's it.
That's right. Yeah.
Like, every art piece is just fake.
Yeah.
They're worth $1 million. Of course they're fake.
Yeah.
It just, it kills me inside a bit.
The earth is flat.
Yeah, but how can we be sure?
Exactly. I haven't seen it. I don't know. How do you know?
It's like playing devil's advocate when there is no, like, you don't have a spot of, yeah.
Yeah. When you just don't have, when you really don't know anything.
Yeah, yeah, you don't know anything, so you're just tossing this out into the ether, but it's like, come on, man, there are reasons.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know them doesn't mean there aren't reasons. Yeah.
Exactly, like, you couldn't look at, you know, an original copy of, like, Action One and a reprint of it and not know that one's a reprint. It's like...
Book's worth $1 million, though, Jeremy. You have to consider at that price point that people are going to create one-to-one fakes.
Yeah.
How can you tell? There's incentive.
I'm sure there is, yeah.
So they're all fake.
Yeah, because that's right. They're all fake.
Because you could just spend $1 million
making
a fake.
No one has $1 million to spend on these things. What are you talking about?
You can spend $1 million making a fake, and then you can sell it.
Yeah.
So clearly, you should invest $1 million into making a fake.
That's right. Break even. That's your best bet.
And no one will be able to tell. Because you put $1 million into it. And it's just that easy. Like, yeah, man, that's as... I could go off on this.
Yeah. No, the joys of Reddit.
Yeah, seriously, man. Some people just... It catches my... It gets me.
Yeah.
It gets me every now and then.
Like, ah. Evokes your ire.
But you also can't fight it. There's that thing where you can't go in too hard either, or else you just look like you're coping.
Yeah.
So it's like, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah.
Because you just ignore it and it's like, oh God, now you have disinformation spreading. But if you go in too hard, you also look like you're like trying to pump it or push it. You're like.
And it's funny, you know, for me, like, I love watching like science videos. But if I ever want to feel depressed about humanity, I just read the comments. You know, it's like, it's one of those things. I'm like, don't do it. Don't click on those comments. you know what you're going to see. Do not click.
Exactly. And then you can't start fighting because it's just like, man, this
is like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I could respond to this person. And then what, like, suck up 3 hours of my life fighting back and forth with someone who knows nothing.
Yeah. In the YouTube comment section or the Reddit comment section, it's just like, this is not it.
It's not even worth your consideration.
Not it. No. Just go make a video or something.
You're not going to change the world convincing this one person.
You're not going to convince that person.
You're never going to change their mind.
Yeah, you're not. That one person you're not going to convince.
They've
never
decided
mind the
earth is flat and nothing. You could send them up into space. Nothing would change their opinion on that.
This is a time thing. Yeah. We just need more time and more information and maybe... we'll see a slight shift. Yeah, maybe.
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 Yeah.
But I mean, with Castlevania going for 90,000, just following that, there was also Kid Icarus.
Yeah.
Coming from the same, I guess now we know, there's been articles published. Joseph from CGC was also saying that.
Joseph all, Leo, right?
Joseph Ross.
Oh, Ross. Okay.
One of the actual CGC, I don't know if he's greater employee public relations. I don't know what he does. Right. He does it all. Right. I don't think there's that many video game people, to be honest there. Right. So I think he's kind of.
They're in the back room somewhere.
Yeah, he has a lot of hats on. But he was commenting in the one of the sealed Facebook groups as well that now these items are coming from the same estate find, mm-hmm. Out of Texas area, I believe.
Right.
And they had Kid Icarus hang tab going for 80,000, Castlevania for 90,000, Burger Time hang tab went for 11,000, Trojan for 7,000. Like, this is insane amounts of early, early, early print, very, very rare NES games. But then there was also TurboGrafx stuff that came from this and some other smatterings of goods. And Joseph is now saying that they'll even pedigree the stuff.
Yeah.
With CGC to kind of try and hold this whole collection together
right.
for what it is.
Right. So they can track it over time and
Yeah, the start of there being more organic, I guess, pedigrees that do exist.
Yeah.
Whether or not this deserves a pedigree, I mean, you can argue either way.
Yeah.
The money amount is definitely there. I mean, we're talking over $200,000 worth of video games, even if it's only 20, 30, 40, 50 games total. Like, this isn't a mass quantity find.
Yeah.
But it's mass quality.
Yeah, mass quality. Like, I think, you know, if you throw this into the comic equivalent and someone stumbles upon a storage locker of, you know, Action 1 and Amazing Fantasy 15 and a bunch of other pristine key issues, you know, I would think, yeah, put a pedigree on that because it's like, that's kind of a thunderclap moment, you know, finding so much quality in even if it's not a huge amount of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the rationale here, because even Kid Icarus, as far as the first print hang tab copy going to auction, I think there has been in the past. I think there has been, but I couldn't find any record of it.
Okay.
But I just feel like in my mind, anecdotally, I have a... Yeah. Right. It's like Ash looking up at Ho-Oh, like, was that Kid Icarus auction
I don't know I it for
saw?
A fact, but I'm sure it's true.
Exactly. I think I saw one years ago.
Yeah.
And, but as for one going for open auction, even throughout the whole boom phase, but same with Castlevania.
Right.
Throughout 2019 through 2022, whatever years you want to say, the most craziness we saw, these items never hit open auction. So as far as truly this being a special find, yeah, I mean, these are items that don't exist.
Yeah.
That's why we see him, like, Tom spent $90,000 on the Castlevania. It doesn't exist.
Yeah. You just can't get a copy. Like, if you're, you know, the hopes of finding that kind of thing at a garage sale are long dead.
Well, it's kind of interesting in that regard. Yes, I agree with you to that respect, but also at the same time, just given how relatively young video games still are, I think the hope and the chance of more finds still does exist.
Oh, for sure.
Like, yeah. We could see, whenever someone talks about finds, it's like, oh, you're going to get the warehouse with 19 copies of Castlevania Hang Tab. No, obviously not. We're talking about like this, how we had one copy of Trojan, one copy of Burger Time, one copy of Kid Icarus. That's what I mean with finds still. We're going to have people who simply bought games from years ago, and for whatever reason, be it store or... Yeah, I really don't think store overflow is going to exist much at all. But people who bought these games never opened them for one reason or another. Like the Zelda was also just someone who had it in their family.
Right.
And they didn't open it. Mm-hmm. And then it was like, hey, what do we have here? And sure enough, $228,000 later, those finds, I think, are still going to exist in this hobby.
Yeah.
I don't prescribe to the notion of one right now at all.
Yeah.
Too young.
Yeah.
Too young of a hobby.
Yeah. We'll see in, like, you know, 20 years down the road what else shows up. Because you just never know.
100%. And that's why I think video game collecting right now is kind of in a special spot, too. Because it is realistic, I guess, that you can still maybe find something at a garage sale.
Yeah.
Maybe find something at a game store even. They don't know.
Yeah.
The amount of information necessary to do it is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll get lucky out there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I kind of think about art the same way. Like, you know, me looking for art over the years.
Art's super young.
It's like, you know, this stuff. Yeah, sure. Some of it is like 30 years old, approaching 30 years old. But, you know, there are still people alive who have made this stuff and have some of it sometimes. Not always the case, but, you know, just because it's not it wasn't made 50 years ago, it's still possible to kind of find some stuff sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You're speaking to these people still owning the original piece.
Yeah.
Like, we haven't had that generation of pass-off yet,
mm-hmm.
where the person, like, this estate sale, I believe, was someone who passed away.
Yeah.
And so now we're finally seeing these items come out.
Yeah.
We are going to see more of that. When people finally rummage through these old houses, what did grandpa have in his house that mm-hmm. even he didn't know he had?
Yeah.
And then the information, like, kind of like the whole antiques roadshow type of thing is going to happen, where we need the older generation. Oh my God, we need all these people to die off, Jeremy, so that we can finally find these video games.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, I think, yeah, we can never really underestimate what people have stashed away. You know, because people don't even know themselves sometimes. It can be a box under the stairs or in the attic. And, you know, they forget they stashed a bunch of games in there they never opened or something like that.
Once my grandparents passed away, that became painfully real. Is that just how much junk they kept. And right. Not that all old people just hold on to stuff, but I think it is a common thing.
It's a different mindset from people who remember, you know, like the Great Depression, all those kinds of things. Holding on to stuff, you know, reusing things was mm-hmm. super important because you just couldn't afford to buy things all the time. So there's still a lot of people alive who, you know, remember growing up in the late 30s or the 40s. You know,
it's just like not a mass-produced world. So
no.
You just hold stuff.
No, yeah.
And, you know, there's who knows? Who knows what treasures are still waiting out there to be found?
Yeah.
Because I think there's going to be a lot more like this in the next 5-10 years.
Yeah. I remember actually it's totally unrelated to video games, but kind of in the same vein. Years ago I went to Toronto and I was visiting a violin shop there. And they showed me a cello made in the 1870s by a very famous French maker. And the owner of the shop had discovered it in an estate sale, and it was stored in a basement for 100 years or more. And the whole cello had completely fallen apart. It was in pieces. But because of that, it was in perfect condition. It was just all the glue seams that came open. The actual plates of the instrument were not cracked at all. So it was like completely preserved, but just in this basement in the French rural countryside for 120 years or something. So, you know, you never know what will turn up. It's just like the most random things.
If stuff from the 1800s is still being turned up, you can be sure that we're going to see video games from the 80s continue to turn up.
For sure, yeah.
Factory sealed or otherwise.
Or otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, there's still far more games to be found out there.
Yeah.
So never give up hope. I know everyone likes to stop, but like maybe this new find will give people hope again.
Yeah, that the hunt is never over.
Yeah, the hunt is never over.
Yeah.
It's still there, baby.
Yeah. Yeah, you just have to I think really what you have to do is grow more resourceful over time. You know, once you've kind of, you felt like you've exhausted your certain methods, you got to change your mindset, do something different.
Just change your whole life and buy a van and travel the country.
That's right.
That's
honestly
it.
I'm sure if someone did that, they could probably do pretty well.
Well, I mean, it's genuinely, I was just referencing American Pickers.
Yeah.
Basically, like, you know, just go around and do it. The Canadian show is never as good. I don't know if you ever watched it.
No. Canada's just too big.
I don't want to say you never find anything cool. But Canadiana? Is that what
Canadiana.
You call it? Canadiana? Americana? Canadiana? Yeah, it's just not as cool. Not as cool.
Yeah.
But Canadian history, just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a hater, but...
I mean, you know, I think we probably had a lot of similar antiques to what Americans had, but I think it's just, you know, due to the relative sparsity of our population and being so spread out.
Well, yeah, you're traveling 900 miles of farmland to try and go through someone's barn,
like one
right?
One place, yeah. Yeah, whereas in the U.S., you can hit a town every 15 miles and it can be, you know, pretty big town. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's what you need to do, though. Get yourself a Canadian Pickers van and, like, go travel. Find the rare games. They're out there, baby.
Or just, like, you know, city hop and go to thrift shops.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if someone does that, then you have to have such a diverse... knowledge base.
You better not only know video games.
Yeah, exactly. You need to know like books and art and antiques,
clothing.
And, yeah,
you
to
need
make it
to know
worth it.
Everything.
Yeah,
and those are the most successful people who do it.
Yeah,
you know, like people always bag on resellers. They bag on the lowest form when you like the people who truly know nothing.
Yeah,
but a lot of like ones who actually do it successfully have a wealth of knowledge of what can be resold.
Yeah,
love them or hate them, like they know what they're doing to a degree.
Yeah.
If you actually want to do it successfully.
That's the difference, is the knowledge.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a lot of resellers aren't successful. Reselling in general doesn't make a lot of money.
Yeah.
The vast majority are not
successful. Unless you can do it in volume.
Well, if you want to do that, like, then you're probably successful.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they all just get lumped together.
Yeah.
Every reseller is successful. No, yeah. They aren't.
I think, you know, it's also people who are, like, you know, buying five, like, PS5s and trying to resell them on eBay. It's like, you know.
It's a savvy business.
Doesn't really take a knowledge base to be able to do that. But, you know, I more admire the people who are, you know, looking for, like, rare books and
grinding it out.
Yeah, grinding it out. You know, yeah. Actually have a knowledge of artists and are looking for, like, paintings at, you know, thrift shops and all these other kinds of things. They turn up, you know.
100%.
Yeah.
But with that, I'll let you guys go. If you're watching on YouTube, hit the like button, leave a comment. All helps. Review the podcast. Helps out as well. Thank you for listening, guys. Thank you, Jeremy, for joining me again today.
Yeah.
Bye.